We all decided to turn in. The bunks were narrow, but the sheets were cool and inviting, and I stayed up late listening to the trembling rhythm of the train and the even breaths of my brothers, and thinking about the stories of our grandfather. It had all started with him, Alma had said. That sounded right somehow. If I could just piece together his story, I thought, then perhaps everything else might fall into place. I finally fell asleep and dreamed I was walking along a village road. Children dressed only in strings of beads played in front of the round huts, and several old men waved to me as I passed. But as I went farther along, I began to notice that people were looking behind me fearfully, rushing into their huts as I passed. I heard the growl of a leopard and started to run into the forest, tripping over roots and stumps and vines, until at last I couldn't run any longer and I fell to my knees in the middle of a bright clearing. Panting for breath, I turned around to see the day turn to night, and a giant figure looming as tall as the trees, wearing only a loincloth and a ghostly mask. The lifeless eyes bored into me, and I heard a thunderous voice saying only that it was time, and my entire body began to shake violently with the sound, as if I were breaking apart. I jerked up with a sweat, hitting my head against the wall lamp that stuck out above the bunk. In the darkness, my heart slowly evened itself, but I couldn't get back to sleep again. We arrived in Kisumu at daybreak and walked the half mile to the bus depot. It was crowded with buses and matatus honking and jockeying for space in the dusty open-air lot, their fenders painted with names like Love Bandit and Bush Baby. We found a sad-looking vehicle with balding, cracked tires that was heading our way. Alma boarded first, then stepped back out, looking morose. "There are no seats," she said. "Don't worry," Roy said as our bags were hoisted up by a series of hands to the roof of the bus. "This is Africa, Alma, not Europe." He turned and smiled down at the young man who was collecting fares. "You can find us some seats, eh, brother?" The man nodded. "No problem. This bus is first class." An hour later, Alma was sitting on my lap, along with a basket of yams and somebody else's baby girl. "I wonder what third class looks like," I said, wiping a strand of spittle off my hand. Alma pushed a strange elbow out of her face. "You won't be joking after we hit the first pothole." Fortunately, the highway was well paved, the landscape mostly dry bush and low hills, the occasional cinder block house soon replaced by mud huts with thatched conical roofs. We got off in Nori and spent the next 2 hours sipping on warm sodas and watching stray dogs snap at each other in the dust, until a matatu finally appeared to take us over the dirt road heading north. As we drove up the rocky incline, a few shoeless children waved but did not smile, and a herd of goats ran before us to drink at a narrow stream. Then the road widened and we finally stopped at a clearing. Two young men were sitting there, under the shade of a tree, and their faces broke into smiles as they saw us. Roy jumped out of the matatu to gather the two men into his arms. "Barak," Roy said happily, "these are our uncles. This is Yusuf," he said, pointing to the slightly built man with a mustache. "And this," he said, pointing to the larger, clean-shaven man, "this is our father's youngest brother, Said."
"Ah, we have heard many great things about this one," Said said, smiling at me. "Welcome, Betty, welcome. Come, let me have your bags."